Welcome to Update One, the podcast of the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Update One provides a forum for listeners to learn about national stories focusing on news, politics, and current events. Now, the latest edition of Update One.
Our guest today from the National Press Club is Irv Chapman, radio reporter in Washington for Bloomberg Radio. Irv's been doing this for, let's call it, quite a while.
Something like six decades.
Why don't you give us a little thumbnail resume?
Well, I came to Washington in the first days of the Kennedy administration to start a bureau for a long-defunct news service called Radio Press International, which was started in New York by a radio commentator who thought networks would be obsolete and he would be able to provide news stories to independent stations around the country. And I appointed myself a White House correspondent in the Kennedy administration after starting a bureau by clipping an ad from the newspaper, Office Space to Rent, hiring a couple of staff, and off we went. And I was there for something like 3 years when I heard about a new news feature on ABC radio that was called initially Flair Reports, because they'd had an hour-long program called Flair they took off the air. And instead, they were going to do short three-and-a-half-minute features on the half hour to complement the newscast on the hour. And they hired a very young staff of eager beavers, including people I still see from time to time. Charles Osgood and Ted Koppel were colleagues. And I stayed at ABC Radio. The news department absorbed this unit after a while for 22 years, serving in six different bureaus in Washington, of course, but also Moscow, Tokyo, Los Angeles, Saigon, New York, and finally back to Washington. And after an interval, I was hired by CNN Business News and spent 6 years on that program. After that, Bloomberg I came to offer because the CNN program was interested in moving me to New York, where instead of interviewing members of Congress and regulators who are our board of directors in Washington, the interviews were with a couple of stock market analysts who would tell you why a company that shed 1,000 workers boosted its stock price. Well, Bloomberg kept me in Washington initially as its first Washington television correspondent, and then after some reorganizations and common practice in the broadcasting business, it's been with Bloomberg Radio ever since.
Bloomberg's been shedding jobs, but I understand that the radio portion of Bloomberg is actually adding people and expanding.
Well, Bloomberg Radio, first of all, in recent years, when Dow Jones went out of the business of supplying business reports to a bunch of radio stations, Bloomberg swept in and picked up many of those clients and hired a good chunk of their staff. And then more recently, Bloomberg, which owned a radio station in New York since the 1980s. I picked up stations that would take their 24-hour news service in Boston, followed by San Francisco, followed by Washington, D.C. And again, staff was added. And more recently still, Bloomberg, both radio and television, went 24 hours on the internet, on radio, by originating broadcasts in Hong Kong and in London. And so around the clock, when New York signs off, you go to the Asia feed and then London and then back to New York again. And so it's been quite a staff expansion in radio. And now Bloomberg Television, after the election year in which they had a special one-hour broadcast with its own staff and only that, pretty much has now reverted to a status quo ante and brought in a television reporter and a couple of producers here in Washington.
In the early days, your early days in Washington, you said you appointed yourself White House correspondent. President Kennedy was popular with the press.
Well, for one thing,
President Trump is not. You've seen some differences.
Well, I've seen a number of presidents in between the two. Kennedy, first of all, would have his news conferences with great frequency and in the State Department auditorium. So he put in hundreds of people there if they wanted to attend and put them on live. Eisenhower had press conferences which were filmed, but with a proviso that the film wouldn't be released until it passed muster with his press secretary to make sure he didn't make any mistakes. And in fact, I think there was only one instance in all that time where something had to be reworked. But Kennedy plunged right ahead, answered every question, sometimes with great wit. At one point, somebody asked the Republican National Committee has passed a resolution calling your administration a failure. And before the guy could say anything more, Kennedy said, I assume it was unanimous. Well, he was articulate. And of course, he was very glamorous covering his campaign. You'd be very close to him, run along with his motorcade as it slowed down, and the candidate would reach out and shake hands with people. And he got where he was going. He looked down and see that somebody had swiped a cufflink. This was the most glamorous figure of our lifetime to be president. He was a matinee idol, and his wife even more so. And so covering him was very easy. He was quotable. He was on the record. His press secretary was very genial. There was only a handful of reporters who covered on a regular basis. And when he was murdered, it was a shattering event for the whole country and, of course, for all of those who had covered him. And I covered his funeral at the first major special event after I moved to ABC.
I remember back then doing a bulletin on radio was not really a big deal, but after the bulletin that Kennedy had been shot, there was kind of a moratorium on bulletins because what could be bigger than that?
Well, you know, there was 3 days of national mourning and all the television programs signed off the air, and ABC featured their two principal commentators, Howard K. Smith and Edward P. Morgan, who were two of the most articulate guys in the broadcasting business and attracted more and more listeners who joined in the national reminiscence followed by the funeral.
Of course, our younger listeners don't remember the days before CNN, so it was for a TV network to go wall-to-wall news was quite unusual. Along the way, you met some other interesting people. Harry Truman comes to mind.
Well, Truman, of course, was in the White House when I was a school kid, which I really was once. But after he was president, he was well known for taking morning walks. That was his constitutional every day in the White House. And then afterward, he moved back to his home in Independence, Missouri, which is where the Truman Library is now. But he'd come to New York or to Washington, and I worked in both places in those years, and make known where he was staying. And at 8 a.m. in the morning, he would walk out the door of the hotel and take his walk. And any reporters who wanted to come along were cheerfully welcome. And so he would take questions and put a microphone in front of him and say, what do you think of the last piece of propaganda that came from Russia? Well, what do you think about this incident in the Middle East? And he would reply, and off we went. And if there were cameramen, film cameramen, they would have to go backwards, of course. And Truman would stop what he was doing and warn them if they were about to back into a lamppost or a fire hydrant. So it was great fun seeing him in those very genial post-presidential days.
And you've also mentioned running into the Emperor of Japan on an assignment.
Well, it was more than running in, because in 1975, he agreed to accept an invitation to visit the United States. Now, this was Emperor Hirohito, who in World War II was a figure of a great mystery, a man on horseback who was the personification of Japanese evil. But he was a very old man at the time of this visit, and he agreed to have a press conference for the American press, during which he said next to nothing. He was asked the obvious question, do you take any responsibility for the World War II? And he gave some mealy-mouthed answer that had been written for him by the Imperial Household Agency. That was for him, he thought, the end of it. Well, they also made a deal for NBC to do a 25-minute segment on today's show if they gave NBC a one-on-one interview, which they did, and he said next to nothing again. And Ed Newman, who came from the States to do this number, spent 24 of the 25 minutes on a travelogue of Japan. But the other two networks demanded their due, and so ABC, which meant me, went to interview Emperor Hirohito. Well, the first thing was our instruction, and that is that we would bring a camera crew, of course, and a microphone, and a big bouquet of flowers, and hide the microphone and the flowers in front of the emperor. Well, and so we did. The sound man was ushered behind a screen and told to stay out of sight with his equipment. The cameraman was allowed to poke his lens out from the screen. And so I waited the emperor's arrival, and he and his translator and his staff walked in, and we did our Japanese bow, and then he reached to shake my hand. And it was one of the limpest handshakes that I've ever had. But then he sat down. We did the interview. He said his little piece about what a great regret it was for him that so many people perished during World War II. And we had our interview, but all I needed was a little sound bite for a minute and 40 seconds. And so I was satisfied. And it was quite an event in my career covering Japan, which I did for almost 6 years. And that was a labor of love, Japan was following.
Moscow was not.
That was not. No, that was an educational experience. We were barely tolerated by the Soviet Union. It was an international agreement. We would allow, the United States would, 24 Russian journalists to reside in New York and Washington, with an extra three for the period the UN General Assembly was in session. They would allow two dozen of us in Moscow, but they didn't have any obligation to tell us anything, give us any access, and that's the way it was. The answer to every question was, read it on the TASS news wire. I never called TASS a news agency. I called it a wire agency because they did use wires. They didn't have much news. I went down to the Central Post Office in those days to do radio programs. All I had was a little desk with a microphone. I never saw anybody. I put on an earphone and said, "Hello, New York. Hello, New York," at the appointed hour. And most days they responded. Some days they didn't. And I had to reestablish the time. And I learned that the New York was told in a Russian voice, your correspondent never showed up for the broadcast. And for television, we had to hire a Russian crew from the agency, Novosti, a state agency. The cameramen were perfectly competent people, but we had to apply in writing to do a given story. If they liked the idea, they would send a three-person crew, cameraman, sound man, and coordinator, otherwise known as your traveling censor. And then if they didn't like the story in the end, it might not make it all the way to New York. And that was the way we functioned. So it was a godsend when ABC, short of staff, suddenly called me up after I'd been there for almost 3 years, and said, "We need you to go and relieve our correspondent in Calcutta because there were refugees streaming out of East Pakistan." And I spent the next 6 months on the road, had to go back to Russia because Richard Nixon was paying the first ever presidential visit. And so I did. And the very next day after he left, I was on a plane to Tokyo for my new assignment. And now we're watching Putin turn the clock back to the Soviet kind of days.
You've been doing this, you said, 60 years, 60 plus years?
Just about, yeah. I don't go back in that memory to being a reporter for my junior high school newspaper. And at the age of 14, I came down to Washington on my own to interview my senator. It was Jacob K. Javits, and in those days, access was easy. I just walked in unannounced, told this receptionist, I'm from the Bronx, New York. I'd like to interview my senator for the Herman Ritter Junior High School News, and got the interview. Walking out of the building, Hubert Humphrey walked by me. So I stopped and said hello. And you know, Humphrey was a great hero to New York liberals all the time, first to last, and asked him a couple of questions, took a couple of notes, and I had my second column for the Herman Ritter News.
Very good. How much longer are you going to keep doing this?
Well, Until I can think of something better to do, and at the moment can't think of anything better to do. My problem is, of course, in radio, you boil everything down to 40 seconds, television a minute 40. Everything else is dinner table conversation. So we've had a lot of dinner table conversations in 50-plus years of marriage.
Thank you very much, Irv Chapman from the National Press Club, where news happens.
You have been listening to Update One, a production of the National Press Club's Broadcast Committee. You can comment on this show or any episode of Update One by going to facebook.com/PressClubDC or on Twitter @PressClubDC. Thanks for listening to Update One.